The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the September-October issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to start on page 8 with Who's Who in Sports. First, we have Dylan DeLucia, Ole Mississippi Rebels pitcher. His height is 6'1". His weight is 205 pounds. He was born August 1st, 2000. Hometown, Port Orange, Florida. After allowing just one run in 6 16 2/3 innings, DeLucia was named Most Outstanding Player of the 2022 College World Series, which Ole Miss won. He finished his junior season with an 8-2 record and a 3.68 ERA. He was drafted by Cleveland in the 6th round. Did you know the Rebels' 2022 national title was their first officially recognized championship in any men's sport? Though the school claimed football titles in 1959, 60, and 62. Micah Parsons, Dallas Cowboys, linebacker. His height is 6'3". His weight is 245 pounds. He was born May 26, 1999, in his hometown, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. After playing middle linebacker in college at Penn State, Parsons moved to the outside as a rookie and became one of the NFL's best pass rushers. He had 13 sacks, the third most ever by a first-year player, and was named NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. But did you know Parsons is an avid chess player? Before his rookie season, he said he wants to be the queen of linebackers, referring to the strongest piece on the chessboard. Next, we have Andrew Wiggins, Golden State Warriors guard. His height is 6'7". His weight is 197 pounds. He was born February 23, 1995, in his hometown, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. In his 8th NBA season, Wiggins made his first All-Star appearance. He averaged 17.2 points per game, the lowest since his rookie year, but was an excellent role player as the Warriors won the NBA title. Wiggins led Golden State with 26 points in a key Game 5 Finals win over the Celtics. Did you know only two Canadian players have been the top pick in the NBA draft? Anthony Bennett and Wiggins. They were taken in consecutive years, 2013 and 2014, by the same team, the Cavaliers. Next, we have Grace Lyons, Oklahoma Sooners shortstop. Her height is 5'7". She was born October 17, 1999, in her hometown, Peoria, Arizona. Lyons finished the season with a career-high 23 home runs and a .401 batting average as Oklahoma went 59-3 and won the Women's College World Series. In the final game, Lyons put the finishing touches on a 10-5 win with a 3-1 homer in the 6th. She was named first-team All-American and was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. But did you know Oklahoma has now won 6 national titles in softball? Only UCLA with 12 and Arizona 8 have won more. Next we have Jose Ramirez, Cleveland Guardians third baseman. His height is 5'9". His weight is 190 pounds. He was born September 17, 1992, hometown, Boni, Dominican Republic. Through 104 games, Ramirez was hitting .284 and slugging .553 while leading the American League in doubles with 36. He has finished in the top 6 in MVP voting 4 times in his career, and in 2016, he hit .312 as Cleveland came within 1 game of winning the World Series. Did you know Cleveland changed its nickname to the Guardians before the 2022 season? The name refers to a pair of statues that sit on the city's Hope Memorial Bridge. Next, we have Gabriel Slonina, Chicago Fire goalkeeper. His height is 6'4". His weight is 194 pounds. He was born May 15, 2004, in his hometown, Addison, Illinois. At 17 years and 81 days, Slonina became the youngest goalkeeper in Major League Soccer history when he made his debut on August 4, 2021. He was just 14 when he signed with the Fire. In 2022, he kept 10 clean sheets in Chicago's first 24 games, which was tied for second most in the league. Did you know in the new year, Slonina will join Chelsea? The Premier League side paid a transfer fee of $10 million this summer to secure his services and agreed to loan him to the Fire for the rest of the Major League Soccer season. Last line, Kelsey Plum, Las Vegas Aces, guard. Her height is 5'8". She was born August 24, 1991, in her hometown, Poway, California. In her fifth WNBA season, Plum made her first All-Star team. She finished the regular season with an average of 20.2 points per game, as the Aces had the best record in the Western Conference, 26-10. Plum was drafted first overall but of Washington in 2017 by the San Antonio Stars, who later became the Aces. But did you know Plum holds the NCAA record for points in a season, 1,109, and career, 3,527, a mark she set with 57 points on the Huskies' senior night. Naomi Girma, San Diego Wave defender. The top pick, her height is 5'7". She was born June 14, 2000, in her hometown, San Jose, California. The top pick in the 2022 Northwest Soccer League draft, Girma wasted no time making her mark on the Wave, being named to the league's best 11 in each of the first 2 months. In college, she was the captain of Stanford's 2019 NCAA championship team. Girma has made 6 appearances for the United States women's national team. But did you know Girma was born to parents who emigrated from Ethiopia? She graduated from Stanford, where she majored in symbolic systems with a 3.92 GPA. And finally, Iga Swiatek, Women's Tennis Association Tour. In April, Swiatek took her height is 5'9". She was born May 31st, 2001 in her hometown, Warsaw, Poland. In April, Swiatek took over the world number one ranking. 2 months later, she won the French Open for the second time. The first was 2020, when she became the first player from Poland to win a Grand Slam event. She was upset in the quarterfinals at Wimbledon, which ended her 37-match winning streak, the longest of this century. Did you know the longest winning streak in women's tennis history is 74 months by Martina Navratilova in 1984? Moving on to warm-up. Whoa, by Skip Shoremore. Geez, would you look at that? And now they expect us to care about Major League Baseball playoffs. In perspective, these 13 words might just be obscuring hundreds of billions of planets. In case you've been living under a rock, the image above came from James Webb Space Telescope, launched last December and currently orbiting our sun. I am saying our sun because after looking at the first batch of Webb images released in July, everything about our little solar system suddenly seems quaint. This photo is of SMACS J0723.3-7327, a cluster of galaxies famous for its beauty and easy-to-remember name. See those tiny little orange and white swirls that take up just a few milliliters each on this page? They look like galaxies because they are galaxies, or were. Our own galaxy, the Milky Way, is 600,000 trillion miles across. I'm not going to tell you how many football fields that is. The Milky Way contains hundreds of billions of planets. Only about 100 billion human beings have ever existed. Each tiny dot in that photo could have easily contained more planets than have ever been people. Do you think any of them hit 750 career home runs? I have to use the past tense because that photo shows those galaxies as they were 4.6 billion years ago. It took the light captured in the picture that long to travel to our solar system. The Earth is only about 4.543 billion years old. You're looking at something as it was before our entire planet formed, even before Tom Brady was drafted. Where some might see our ultimate cosmic insignificance, I see a huge opportunity for the expansion of the KIPP brand. These images could be the start of a brand new era of discovery. And the first step in finding something is seeing it. One thing Webb will show scientists to see more clearly is exoplanets, worlds outside our solar system. Webb records the light that reflects off a planet and then breaks apart that data to estimate the chemical composition of the atmosphere. Pretty wild, huh? In theory, this telescope could detect Earth-like clouds around a planet trillions of miles away. Imagine it. Entire world full of potential new SI Kid readers. Maybe on some of those worlds, the science sentient species has a Yodo-esque 400-year-old childhood. Most of you kids ditched this magazine around 16. We just have to figure out how to broadcast my column so it's not 4.6 billion years old when it arrived in their alien inboxes. Lest you think I'm being geocentric, I'm sure there's plenty these planets have to teach me as well. Let's take an already discovered exoplanet. For example, TRAPPIST-1D is 40 light years from Earth and about a third of its size. It's so named for being the third planet orbiting TRAPPIST-1, an ultra-cool red dwarf in the Aquarius constellation. Now, I'm not here to tell you that aliens exist and live on TRAPPIST-1. They may be there, but I'm definitely not breaking that news in the eighth paragraph of a bi-monthly column. Imagine the sports implication, however, of a habitable planet orbiting a small, cool sun. It takes 4 days for the world to complete its orbit of TRAPPIST-1. That makes me 912 years old on TRAPPIST-1D, and I could get my learner's permit. The sky on TRAPPIST-1D varied from a day that's not brighter than our twilight to a night much brighter than ours. They could play baseball all night with no stadium lights. These hypothetical TRAPPISTians probably have eyes that evolved to perceive objects in low light. They're going to totally dominate us in the intergalactic Olympics. Are we doing enough to combat the incoming TRAPPIST-1D archery threat? And that's just one exoplanet. NASA has identified 8,819 candidates, each with their own unique atmospheres, topographies, and potentially bat and ball games. By the way, if the TRAPPISTians or any other alien races are monitoring Earth media, I want to clarify something. We come in peace, but we're not afraid of a challenge. Just because you might have super eyes or five arms doesn't mean we're going to concede the anti-gravity basketball championship. We just want to know what we're up against so we can brief LeBron. Anyway, if you're an extraterrestrial basketball-playing species looking to challenge Earth, send first contact to kip.shoremore@si.com. Skip the cornfield landings and come straight to this planet's smartest member, me. I'll be awaiting your transmissions. Warm-up, reader engagement. Kip answers your questions. Levi writes, "Hey, Kip, I know most professional sports teams have mascots, and I was wondering who your favorite mascots are." Hey, Levi, I really shouldn't reveal a ranking this important on the letters page. I feel like my top five mascots could easily fill up 2 to 4 pages in the back of the magazine. In fact, I can't believe they didn't pick me for pages 46 and 47. Players with the same name. We may be running out of ideas. Anyway, I gravitate toward the mascots that don't make any sense or fit the team concept at all. Philly Fanatic, Phoenix Suns Gorilla, Stanford Tree, Yopi, Western Kentucky Big Red. Patrick writes, I think that errors should not be given as often in the major leagues. Just the other day, I saw an MVP candidate track down a foul ball toward the stands, reach over the fence, and drop it. He was charged with an error when really any other player couldn't have made the play look as easy. I appreciate you protecting the identity of the MVP candidate who dropped the ball, Patrick. That shows your commitment to not taking errors seriously, and you shouldn't. Errors, after all, only measures a fielder's ability to catch the balls they reach. But it's more important to get to balls in the first place. That emphasis has led to holistic fielding stats like ultimate zone rating and total zone runs. According to total zone runs, Orioles third baseman Brooks Robinson prevented more opposing scoring through his fielding than any other player in history, 293 runs. He also made 264 errors and the Hall of Fame. Simone writes, if Steph Curry played in the 80s or 90s, would he still be as dominant as he is now? Simone, you're asking the tough questions. It's hard for me to imagine Curry in the 80s or 90s. In fact, it's hard for me to imagine the 80s or 90s at all. The problem with sending a trailblazing player back in time is how close-minded the coaches would be. In the 80s, Curry wouldn't have been allowed to shoot 600 threes a season. In the 90s, he'd be good, but maybe not the primary scoring option. Just imagine Curry passing up open trays to throw the ball to Shaq in the low post. Send your questions to Kip at kip.shoremore@si.com. Your headline goes here. Are you interested in sports journalism? Are you a kid between the ages of 8 and 13? Do you live in the United States or Canada? We're looking for the next group of SI Kids kid reporters who will report on sports in their communities. If you're interested in applying, have an adult email kidreporter@si.com with your name, age, location, 3-story ideas, and a short writing sample, and an explanation of why you want to be a kid reporter. We may not be able to reply to all applications. Future star Nazir Primus, birthplace Brooklyn, New York, birth date January 19, 2008, sport fencing. Nazir Primus loves the mental aspect of fencing, which he compares to physical form of chess, and his mind was where it needed to be in July when he won the Youth 14 Saber Division of USA Fencing National Championships. Nazir picked up fencing 4 years ago after his uncle introduced him to him and now trains at New York's Peter Westbrook Foundation. Most kids my age would be playing basketball, football, soccer, Nazir says. I like how I stand out. Are you a sports kid? If you think you have what it takes to be a Sports Kid of the Month, have an adult submit your nomination at sportskid@si.com. Fun with math. Warm up. The rest is yet to come. The infinite monkey theorem holds that if given infinite time, a bunch of monkeys randomly banging typewriters would eventually write the complete works of William Shakespeare. You may remember the March-April issue when Buzz tried to leverage this theory to use teams of baseball-playing primates to create new what's-the-call scenarios. Professional sports feel like they've been going on forever. They played the Major League Baseball in 1876, but in the grand scheme of things, they're quite new. Every play that could happen hasn't quite happened. How do we know? Things are still happening. Football fans who follow the account at NFL/scoreajammy on Twitter understand. The account posts when there's a scoreajammy, a combination of score and orgamy, a result that's never occurred before in the NFL. Sports writer John Boyce introduced the concept and coined the term in an attempt to chart every final score that hadn't yet happened. With football, in which points typically come in multiples of 3 and 7, certain scores really stick out. And the Twitter bot even gives updated odds during games of a scoreajami occurring. Once a defense records a safety or a couple of extra points get flubbed, the real excitement begins. The most recent such game, the 1,002nd, was Cowboys 51, Eagles 26 in January. The board on the opposite page shows which scores are still possible. Don't expect it to fill up anytime soon. A team finishing with just 1 point is technically possible, but highly unlikely, thanks to a rule about safeties on point after attempts. Scoregami is sports that happen in 1 point increments and are obviously much rare. During their July 22nd drubbing of the Red Sox, the Blue Jays seemed destined for a scoregami, but the game finished 28-5, a scoregami in the NFL, but not in Major League Baseball. Still, unique outcomes happen in baseball. On July 4th, the Minnesota Twins turned the first 8-5 triple play, that's center fielder to third baseman, not the score, in Major League Baseball history. With Chicago White Sox runners on first and second, Byron Buxton made an over-the-shoulder catch at the wall, then threw the ball back to Gio Urshela, who tagged the trailing runner before getting the lead runner out by stepping out on second. So, keep watching and keep reading. Eventually, this magazine will print Shakespeare, or something just as good. What if these stars reversed roles? Ancient riddle: if a tree falls in a forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? Modern riddle: if a shortstop gets 3,000 hits in Kansas City and no one watches him on national TV, does he make the Hall of Fame? Manny Ramirez raised this question in June when he said on a Red Sox broadcast, "It's like if you put Jeter in Kansas City in those years, he was just a regular player." Perhaps Ramirez picked on Jeter out of jealousy. The former Yankees captain recently made the Hall of Fame. Ramirez has fallen well short of induction 6 times, likely due to multiple performance-enhancing drug suspensions. Maybe he meant it as a backhanded compliment. The Red Sox legend also said, "You got to understand this. If you haven't played in Boston or New York, you're not in the big leagues." Or perhaps the soundbite, like so many of his misadventures in left field, was just Manny being Manny. Whatever the case, he kind of, sort of, has a point. Kansas City Jeter would still be an impressive player. Any middle infielder with 3,465 hits makes it to Cooperstown. Consider, however, another famous shortstop from the 1990s, Barry Larkin. He had an .815 career OPS and a 70.5 career WAR. Jeter had an .817 OPS and a 71.3 WAR. They were statistically identical during their playing days, but not in retirement. Larkin received 51.6% of votes during his first year on the Hall of Fame ballot. Jeter got 98.8%. Swap Larkin and Jeter, and the Yankees probably still win those championships. But then, do the Reds become a title contender? Circumstances definitely play a role in an athlete's legend. How much depends a lot on the sport and the individual. Round mound of renown. I can't write more than 400 words of slightly less than laudatory Jeter coverage before the angry emails start to pour in. So consider the NBA, a league in which championships have an even bigger impact on legacy and individual players have a bigger impact on championships. Probably the most famous ringless hooper of all time is Charles Barkley, mainly because Shaquille O'Neal brings it up every 5 minutes on Inside the NBA. Sir Charles spent 8 seasons on the Philadelphia 76ers before getting traded to the Phoenix Suns. Despite believing it was their destiny to win in 1993, he ran into the buzzsaw of Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls dynasty in the finals. Many of Jordan's contemporaries lived in his shadow. But to quote Jordan's own Hall of Fame speech, "All the videos, you never just saw me. You saw Scottie Pippen." Let's imagine, though, a radically different 1984 NBA draft. The Trailblazers take Jordan at number two instead of center Sam Bowie. Portland already had one. All-star shooting guard Jim Paxson, blocking a future Hall of Famer at the same position, Clyde Drexler. Jordan and Drexler, who have been asked about this particular what if. A bazillion times have both said they could have made it work. Trailblazers forward Michael Thompson, dad of Clay, has said they could have had a 15-year dynasty. But Portland clearly thought it had enough guards and not enough size. Maybe Jordan and Drexler don't gel. Maybe they do. But the Trailblazers manage only a couple of championships instead of a multi-decade reign. That might be enough of a window for a 76ers team that drafted Charles Barkley and point guard John Stockton in the first round instead of Barkley and point guard Leon Wood. How does Jordan, Drexler, Thompson measure up to Stockton, Barkley, Moses Malone? Please don't answer that. The only people more defensive than Jeter fans are Jordan GOAT truthers. Big fish in a bigger desert. I've offended Yankee fans and Jordan fans. Time to aim higher. The entire country of Canada. The trick in imaging a player moving from a big market to a small market in hockey is figuring out which is which. The seven franchises in Canada have, on average, much more engaged fan bases. The United States is a much larger country. When the Oilers traded Wayne Gretzky to the Kings in 1988, commentators acted as if Derek Jeter had moved from Kansas City to New York. The reason was simple. More people live in California than all of Canada. Gretzky's star power ensured a loyal following in Edmonton, but it could ignite a massive new fan base in the United States. In fact, an even more extreme version of the Gretzky phenomenon may be on the horizon. The Toronto Maple Leafs are the undisputed most popular hockey club in the world. Their franchise player is Austin Matthews, who this past season became the first 60-goal scorer in the decade. It's arguably the greatest marriage of talent and market size in NHL history. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.